Welcome to Healing Ties, a show that encourages you to live happy and healthy. By focusing on the emotional, physical, spiritual, and financial aspects of life, we tie four important components together, like a bow tie. And who isn't happy when they're wearing a bow tie? This not only creates a healthy life for each one of us, but will also create healthy communities. And now, here's your host, Chris McClellan, the Bow Tie Guy.
Well, greetings, everyone. It is Chris McClellan, the Bow Tie Guy, for another episode of Healing Ties. How's your December going? You know, it's not too cold here in Florida, but I know parts of the country, at least parts of the United States, are a little frigid these days. And certainly want to send a shout-out and a hello to all of our listeners on UKHealth.com over in the United Kingdom. Thank you for your continued support of the show. And we tend to focus on caregiving, life after caregiving, people who are in the middle of caregiving, and I think oftentimes we think about caregiving as caring for our spouse, caring for our partner, caring for our grandparents or parents, but what happens if you're, a child, a teenager, that's happened to be caring for your parents with ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease? There's more of this going on in society than I think any of us realize. And my guest today, Jody O'Donnell Ames from Hope Loves Company, has quite the story to share with us today and what she is doing to bring this wonderful issue to the forefront and how she is helping kids throughout all over the world interact with not only with themselves, but with other kids and parents who are dealing with ALS. And it's my pleasure to welcome Jody to the show. Jody, how's it going?
It's going great. It's my pleasure to be on your show. Thank you so much for the invitation. And I'm you're in Florida. I'm here in New Jersey, and it's freezing. 20 degrees.
It's 20, and I just got a little message before we went live with the show that from a friend from Chicago who said, "I just went to the bank and it's 2 degrees," and I thought, "Oh goodness."
Well, I just ran to the bank too and came back in and said, "Oh my goodness, it's freezing out there. It's 20 degrees and flurrying." So I would like to be in sunny, balmy weather right now. But other than that, I'm doing great.
Well, the next time you're in Florida, we'll do a show live on location, maybe right in front of the beach. So
that sounds perfect. That sounds perfect. Let's do that now. I'll be right there.
You know, Jody, I always like to... especially as it relates to caregivers, everybody has a story, but not everybody gets a chance to tell their story. And that's one of the reasons why I love doing these shows, because I get an opportunity to meet folks like yourself who are creating healing ties in people's lives. And I just like you to tell our listeners about Hope Loves Company and what your mission is in serving the kids and the ALS community, because it's very impactful.
Well, it's a pretty long story, so I guess I can start from the beginning. It starts with a patient, obviously, yeah. And my late husband, Kevin, lived with ALS mm-hmm. in the 90s mm-hmm. and fought his battle heroically and was incredible. And he unfortunately passed from Lou Gehrig's disease, or ALS, in 2001. Mm-hmm. And during that 5.5 years of caregiving, I learned a lot. I was not a nurse, a trained nurse, or, didn't have any medical experience. I was a former teacher. But, you learn on the job through necessity and love and commitment. So I was grateful that I had that chance to help him live with ALS. ALS is a terminal illness, and it's a neurodegenerative illness. And the results are pretty consistent with losing the ability, losing muscle function and the ability to use your arms, your legs, eventually your voice and the ability to breathe. So most patients do live 2 to 5 years after diagnosis and do become paralyzed and wheelchair and bed, ridden. So it's a horrific disease.
Yes.
And it takes a toll on, obviously, the patient first and foremost, but it's a family disease that affects everyone involved. Soon after Kevin passed away, I knew I needed to keep advocating and being a part of the ALS journey in his memory, and I was working in Philadelphia at the ALS Hope Foundation, and there I met another man who lost his wife to ALS and his two children, so that was Warren and Nora and Adam. And we became friends, and 2 years later, we married.
Oh.
So, yes. So, and the story is pretty amazing because we actually met through a group session where I ordered his wife's book to share with children who were caregivers to their grandparents with ALS.
Oh, goodness.
And so we met through this book, so I think that we did have some angels working on setting us up. And we are currently married, and our children are now grown adults. And in the midst of all that, I came up with the term Hope Loves Company because, you know, you're raising three children who've all lost a parent, who've all experienced caregiving, and grief comes out in different ways and at different times. And I thought I knew a lot about child psychology as a teacher and working with children. But, you know, when it hits you like that with your own children and in very unique ways, it was eye-opening. And I thought someday when my children are old enough and they are now adults living on their own, and that I would start a nonprofit. So Hope Loves Company is the only nonprofit in the United States with the mission of providing educational and emotional support to children and young adults who had or have a loved one battling ALS. And it's a very specific niche, and we have a lot to do. So I'm grateful that you're asking me, and we're excited to be able to help children, caregivers around the country and hopefully the world. So I'm grateful for this time that we can share our purpose and our mission.
Goodness, it's such a wonderful story, and there are so many things that you said there that really hits home to me, and especially as it relates to we think we know it all when we're in the middle of something, but then when we really are in the middle of something and you step back from the experience after it has transitioned, it really is. And it's quite impactful. And advocacy, there's a book out that it's called Advocacy Heals You. And I sense you will understand that.
My goodness,
That you'll get that concept 100%.
Helping is healing in my perspective, for me personally. Helping is healing.
And it's so important as... In any caregiving situation, we sometimes don't recognize that there's a beginning and an end to the caregiving situations that we all face. But it's when it ends, sometimes we do find our voice, and you've certainly have done that with Hope Loves Company.
Well, thank you.
So tell us a little bit about the kids that are involved.
Well, we have children from all over the United States who mm-hmm. come to us. They usually vary between the ages of 4 and 21. Some have lost parents to ALS, and some are currently helping parents with ALS or grandparents. And the common thing that we found is they're just incredible. They're compassionate and wonderful kids who we get to meet and work with, which is truly bittersweet in all sense of the phrase. But what we do is we provide free books that we have, two of which I've written. Stars That Shine, and the other one is Someone I Love Has ALS, so we send those out. Mm-hmm. And we have What Did You Learn Today, which was written by my current husband's late wife, Tina Singer Ames. And so we send free books out. We send Hugs of Hope care packages, which are, you know, just little care packages of hope with a card saying to a child who may feel alone in this that we're here and we understand what he or she is going through. And we have an ambassadorship, so we have great kids who help spread the word and speak to other kids around the country via, you know, texting or email, and sometimes they Skype together. And then we have Camp HLC, which is a free weekend retreat, and we currently have four in the U.S., thanks to our helpers and sponsors, so that we can bring a weekend retreat that's respite, fun, camping, you know, the silly stuff, songs and bonfire and s'mores, along with time to talk about ALS and how they're coping.
So they can actually be a kid for the weekend.
They can be a kid. And we've seen it over and over again where, you know, they come in and they are kids, and when they have time to talk, then it's evident where they're sharing stories of using Horrier lifts and, you know, mom's trying to speak and is choking and how they're scared. And, you know, so there's time to be a kid, and there's also time to share any concerns they might have or just want to be heard or just want to have the chance to speak in a safe setting.
Oh, my gosh. You know, as I'm listening to you and taking some notes, I'm reminded again of how common caregiving is for really everybody. And one of the statements that really stuck out that you just said was, you know, that the kids feel alone. There's that. I think for caregivers that we often universally feel that even though there's millions and millions of caregivers across the nation, we get that sense when we're in the middle of it that we're, you know, we're the only ones doing it, or we feel alone. But then when we talk to other caregivers, you know, that ambassadorship, I just love that word that you used, that the kids are going, I could just see the kids going back and forth with text messages and supporting one another.
Well, I have to share this little story because you'll appreciate that. So we had a camp in Massachusetts, and we had maybe six or seven teens talking a little bit later at night in the cafeteria than the younger kids, and, you know, we're kind of just to the side so they can have their privacy, but also tuning into what their topic is, and it was Horrier lifts, and the teens were telling their Horrier lift horror stories. And if anyone doesn't know what a Horrier lift is, but it's an actual tool to help someone who's paralyzed get in and out of bed. And so these kids were actually laughing about their Horrier lift horror stories. And
right.
You know, where else are you going to find that?
Exactly.
You won't. I mean, most adults don't know what a Horrier lift is.
And right.
Mm-hmm. Most hospitals don't even have them. So it's just something very specific to ALS and the needs of a paralyzed patient. So something where they can laugh about something they all know about and can relate to, and find a reason to smile about something that happened alone in it at one point, but now they're talking to other kids and they're all not alone in it. They can all relate.
They can relate, you know, and you know that old phrase, relate. Laughter is the best medicine. And
exactly.
You know, it's these stories that when you share them back and forth with people who get it, then you know that you're really a part of a community and can feel supported. When you can laugh about something that is, you know, serious.
Right. It's true. One of the things I really enjoy doing is just speaking to people to let them know that however they're feeling is, and whatever it is, it's normal. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the parts of being a caregiver is, I remember getting to a grocery store in the midst of Kevin's illness, and being there, standing in an aisle, and having no idea a recollection of how I got there or why I was there, because I was so sleep deprived. Mm-hmm. And I recently talked to a caregiver who said, I'm losing my memory. I think I'm getting really old. And I said, like, you're not getting old. It's you have so much stress, and your memory keeps what it needs. You know, the superfluous stuff is thrown out because it's not going to make or break the day as far as, you know, meds and range of motion and, right. You know, and all of the caregiving things that are a priority. You might forget to get gas in the car, or you might forget to pay a bill. That's something that happens, and don't feel like you're alone in this, because even today there are times where someone will mention something to me. Apparently I put on a play with all of my nieces and nephews in the midst of being a caregiver, and couldn't remember that I actually put on a play at Christmas of Tom Sawyer with my nieces and nephews, and there was a playbill and everything. And I don't remember that. And I had my relatives give me the details of the set and send me pictures, and I guess it wasn't something that I had room for in my long-term memory at the time.
And that's okay. That is something.
That's okay.
It's yeah. Okay. It's something that, you know, like the other story that you just recounted about going to the grocery store and forgetting, you know, that is so common for all caregivers, because our mind is, you know, we're so intent on caring, and then our mind's usually in five or six different places, that those things do happen, and it is okay.
Exactly. And if, you know, if you're wondering, it's normal, it typically is pretty normal.
Yes. And that's why it's important to share these stories. So when other caregivers hear this, say, you know, that happens to me too. It is okay. So,
right. I'm not alone in this.
I'm not alone in this.
I did go to work today with two different shoes on. I've heard that one too.
Oh, I remember those days. Yes, very much so. And different colored socks, but that's okay.
Yeah, totally different shoes.
Totally
they looked
different.
Same in the morning, and I guess I was a little tired. But.
Yeah, whoever made up these silly rules that shoes are supposed to match? I don't know.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about the camps, because they're obviously very unique, very special, and they really create community. So can you tell our listeners how the camps came about, and just, you know, kind of give us a picture of what a weekend would look like?
Absolutely, would love to. You know, I think as a mom and a caregiver and an advocate and just as a human who wants to help, I thought of, well, if my children did have these resources while they were going through this, what would have been ideal? You know, what should have happened? And so the camp starts on a Friday night, and the families all come in, and they usually come in from several states, up to 10 states, to one camp. So everyone has been traveling, and they're tired, and maybe they're a little apprehensive. Many have not met another person who's living with ALS or another child who's been affected.
Right.
Many may not have been away from a parent, you know, so all different needs. However, we quickly become a family. We introduce ourselves, and we just have a quick sentence of, you know, what brings us here, and then we have a meal together, and we do team-building, silly things, games, mm-hmm. so that we get to know each other. Mm-hmm. And by the second day of activities, of hiking and, you know, sometimes it's ziplining and rock wall climbing, the kids, really, you just start to see the change of being a kid again. So they come in a little bit worried, and they're not quite sure how to yet relax. And then by the next day, you can just see their faces are changing, and they're kids, and they're letting go and having fun and being silly. And then during sessions, it varies. You know, some children are more comfortable with sharing, and some children need to, you know, just be quiet and listen. So it's all good. It's all what's best for them. So we don't put any you know, stipulations, or, you know, it's just what's most comfortable for them. So we want children to communicate with each other as far as, you know, exchanging emails and building buddies and support systems with our staff as well, and then they can follow up after camp, which adjourns on Sunday afternoon. So we give hugs goodbye. We have usually we pick two campers that are Hope Loves Company hero caps that they get, because okay, they're the children who maybe expressed an enormous courageous growth over the weekend. You know, sometimes they're the ones who are on the peripheral, and other times they're the ones who is the leader, you know, who sets the tone. So we just have that opportunity to have fun together and unite in this way that we all understand. And the best thing happened to me after the first camp was said by a 15-year-old whose dad at the time was living with ALS. And she said, for the first time in my life, I don't have to explain ALS to anyone.
Wow. Wow. That's very powerful.
Yes. Yes.
For the first time in my life, I don't have to explain ALS to anyone. I just, that sends chills up and down my spine.
That was my moment that I knew that we were on the right path. You know, like up until now, I've had to explain this over and over and over again to everyone I meet. And this is the first time I didn't have to. And what a relief that was.
I'm just, the community that you are creating is just, it's going to be, it's so impactful for not only just the kids, but my goodness, I would imagine that the parents, as they are able, are very appreciative as well.
Yes, we got a really dear letter from a patient after the last camp expressing just that, saying, you know, I live with ALS. My husband and sons came, and they were apprehensive about what to expect, and the fact that you provide this every year for them and that they can go to it gives me such peace and such joy. So we do. We get that from patients. We get it from the chaperones who come, from the children. And the staff, who attends as volunteers, they leave with so much more insight and, you know, perspective and wanting to, you know, make the world a better place. I think you can't help but to, whether you go there to help someone else, not be helped in some sense.
Well, I imagine the change that occurs, in, especially in some of the professionals who see this, is quite remarkable as well. And I hope you, if you don't mind me sharing this one story, it's somewhat relatable, but maybe not. But in doing, this has been a number of years ago, I did a pastoral clinical education in hospice. And I sat and listened to a physician. He walked in. He was a big, burly guy. You know, your impressions of him when you see him is not somebody that would be a touchy-feely type of person.
Right.
But as he began to talk about his journey switching his mode of operation from curative care to palliative care, and the transformation that had on him both personally and professionally, and how that changed his life. As I'm listening to you, I'm sensing that people who are volunteering, people who are involved in this as professionals, and they're seeing these kids firsthand, it's got to change. It has to have a major change in their outlook as well.
We have, we have volunteers who come in who are professional, who do work with ALS families, and we also have, you know, people who have experience with Boy Scouts and just outdoors and counseling and other areas as well. But the people who are working specifically with ALS families, our last camp had a response from a patient care service provider who said, I walk into a house now with different eyes.
Wow.
Walk into a patient's home with new eyes because I walked in before with one focus and now I see the whole view.
Oh my goodness. Powerful. Oh my goodness, that is just think of sharing that message across the spectrum. How we can get people to look at situations like this with a different set of lenses. And it's through these personal experiences that the lenses do change.
That's so true. And getting those opportunities just help you to grow and learn.
Well, because yeah, oftentimes, I find this in healthcare, I'd be interested in your take on this, that we work within too many silos. And if we could step outside of our silos, especially in healthcare, and see situations through the lens of the people who are in the middle of these healthcare issues, and see it through their perspective, then goodness, how much better care would be.
That's a great idea, to just open perspectives. I think that would be good for everyone.
I just think it's, you know, for me, it's kind of, as you know, it's kind of been my mission as I find my comfort zone after Richard making his life transition from esophagus cancer. Most caregivers, they find their life after caregiving ends, and you know, their mission to whatever their mission is, it usually circles around something like seeing the issue through a different set of lenses. Because, and I think you would agree with this, when you're in the midst of caregiving, no matter what healthcare calamity it might be, it's two lives are affected. And then when caregiving ends, it's like losing two relationships in one. And it doesn't have to be when you're in, it doesn't have to be when you're just in the trenches where you can understand this. By sharing these stories, we certainly hope people get a different perspective on what care actually looks like.
I think you're absolutely, you've hit the nail on the head. Especially in caregiving, because it does seem like such a lonely role.
Right.
And I think that when you're engrossed in caregiving and when you're working with a patient who you love so dearly, you tend to, and maybe it's just me and maybe it's just you, but you lose some of yourself.
Yes. You lose your identity.
You lose your identity. And so, you know, so now, for me personally, after Kevin passed away, it was like, well, who was I? Because everything that I did or thought about related to his well-being.
Right.
And I had to find that out all over again. And the way that Hope Loves Company was created was that I could take all of that learning from that experience, mm-hmm. with all of the, looking at from your perspective, the silo,
right.
idea of, okay, well, here's what's being done, where, you know, which ones are empty, what's not being done.
Right.
And then filling that need based on all of that together.
And as I've thought about, our show today, and so looking forward to this wonderful conversation, I'm thinking about, to be honest with you, I haven't thought a whole lot about how caregiving impacts kids. That's just not something that has been on my radar. But as I've been preparing for the show and thinking about this, and then after this conversation, what you're doing for these kids now is going to have such a positive impact as they continue on with life. Because they are going to be able to see caregiving from such a different perspective at such a young age, and they're going to be able to help so many people with their own stories. It's gratifying to meet somebody like you.
Well, likewise. But what I was going to say was, I think that, you know, and I'm sure you would agree that caregiving can truly bring out the best in you.
Yeah.
When it's done with compassion and love and purpose. And children are just, I mean, children come, they're all heart, you know,
right.
Especially young children. They want to please, and these children learn, they do learn a lot of compassion early on, or they may have already had compassion that's just even developed even more. And in a way, they grow up very quickly, but they also become more sensitive and more caring adults.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've learned quickly that, as a 14-year-old just put it to me on Monday when we spoke at Holy Family University, that my life changed quickly when my dad was diagnosed, and what I thought was important, you know, my first crush or, you know, the girl gossip became on the back burner. And that's the truth. So she looks at things very differently now.
Yeah, you see it again. You see it through a different set of lenses.
Right. And there's actually a group called the American Association of Caregiving Youth, I believe is what it's called. So there are caregivers all over the United States, not just for parents with ALS, but parents with cancer, parents who are disabled, and
sure.
and parents who, you know, I always think about the service members and parents who are married, but you know, are single parenting because of a husband or a wife in another country, serving our country. And that's may not be caregiving, but it may be that they step into a different role.
Exactly.
That's not quite much, the quote-unquote normal role of an 8-year-old. Because now, John has to help out more and have more responsibilities. And so there are many different types of caregiving children, and I was surprised to learn when I did my research that it's the numbers are greater than I had expected.
And I think it, as people become more comfortable in talking about their roles as caregivers, I think the numbers are just going to continue to increase for both the adult caregiver and the kids who are caregiving for their parents. I just think we're scratching the surface now, because caregiving is now in every neighborhood and in every boardroom. Everybody's touched by caregiving in one way or another. And people are becoming more comfortable in talking about and recognizing that they're doing it. So,
right.
And you're
Which
certainly a champion
thing.
In this.
Good thing. Make it a part of the conversation.
So, Jody, we just have a few minutes left. I think we're going to have to do a series of podcasts together. This is just too much.
I would love to.
This is just too much of an important topic, and it's just people need to be aware of these wonderful camps. Now, I don't know if you want to jump. If I'm jumping the gun, and if you wanted to mention the event that's coming up in Iceland in the summer, but if I'm letting the cat out of the bag, I have to apologize.
No, so I spoke in Florida last year at the MND ALS International Alliance meeting, and people were there who are living with ALS, people are there who are caregivers and family members, researchers, healthcare workers, so a variety of interest, and a man, Gujan, who lives with ALS in Iceland, heard me speak, and as well as Mackenzie Anderson, one of our ambassadors, and invited us to Iceland. So we're making this happen with his help in 2017, July 2017, and it actually might even be a documentary. So
awesome.
A lot of exciting things are happening I think when you, as you very well know, when you take something that is good and you put a lot of hard work and dedication into it and you make it a, you know, it's important to people and it's important to benefiting others. I think it just will evolve as, mm-hmm. as it should. So hopefully our ambassadors are going to teach the Icelandic ambassadors about Hope Loves Company, about how they can start communicating to one another and building relationships, about our camps, and get to see some Iceland too. So it will be a dream come true for for all of us.
It's going to be an awesome summer for Hope Loves Company.
It is. A busy one at that.
A busy one too. So how can our listeners find you on the internet? What's your website address, telephone number? Give us all the pertinent details.
Well, we have a website. It's www.hopelovescompany.org, and there's a contact me link there. Mm-hmm. We were lucky to be featured on the Today Show and in a People magazine segment. So if you look up Hope Loves Company or Jody O'Donnell Ames with either of those, you will find those segments. We have several YouTube videos. We're on Instagram, but I do a pretty bad job at that. Facebook and Instagram. And, you know, if anyone is interested, if we can be of help, we're here. Our number is 609-730-1144. Our books are all on Amazon, and I truly welcome the opportunity to speak as much as I can about this cause so near and dear to my heart and to reach as many families as I can. So I am very grateful, Chris, for this opportunity to speak with you today, and you did a great job. So you made it easy for me.
My passion is sharing the information and collaborating with folks like yourself. And I do have to tell the listeners, all you've got to do is, once you Google Hope Loves Company or Jody O'Donnell Ames, you know, two of the first things that come up are the Today Show and the People and the article in People's
Great.
Magazine. So,
and I thank you for your help with our, you know, with Iceland. We're very fortunate to have your interest and your efforts helping us to get there. So thank you.
Yeah, you know, we're starting our TLO Travels and Tours. TLO is an acronym for the little one, which was a reference to Richard in my blog, The Purple Jacket. So the travel company is really dedicated to him and to, you know, because travel tours, caregivers can do this. And it's not as difficult as we might think it would be. And through working with you, you know, we hope to be able to demonstrate to caregivers and their carees that they can be mobile when it's safe. And it's great to be able to work with you on this project as well.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, Jody, I can't thank you enough. We'll schedule some more podcasts with you. And through your great work at Hope Loves Company, you are certainly somebody that's creating healing ties, not only locally, but internationally. Thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Okay, that does it for this episode of Healing Ties. You know, my name's Chris McClellan, the Bowtie Guy. I'm creating a life to love after caregiving ends through writing, radio, travel, advocacy, and being with awesome people like Jody O'Donnell Ames. Healing Ties is a part of the Whole Care Network. Check us out online at WholeCareNetwork.com. We'll see you for another episode of Healing Ties real soon. Bye-bye.